Just before leaving.
Let's see.
I believe the Tempo Topaz program was mm-hmm. underway at this point.
Yeah, it was, and that's another program I didn't mention, but the program I worked on.
Tell us a bit about that. That'd make a good case history of the 2 points.
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact, because Gene had worked very closely in the early stages of that Tempo Topaz development with the design group, and they had developed a proposal, and it was an escort-derived car. And the general consensus in the design center was that the thing that had developed wasn't very good. It was a very square kind of a car. Certainly not an aerodynamic look at all. It had a lot of extraneous chiseling and design lines in the side, weren't required. And it was really a pretty homely beast, to be honest with you. And I'm trying to remember how we got involved in that program. I guess the car wasn't that well received. And yeah. And let me just think a minute about the time span. All right. See, I was in small car design. B, the group was called. And there were, and this other, this the Gene's car was being done by, I say Gene's car because, as I said, there are always times when on a hot program, Gene would step in and just sort of really dictate what was happening in the design. This was Gene's car. And I'm trying to remember how the door opened to make some changes on that car. I seem to remember that Jack Telnak became director of small car design. You know, or he became... No. This is when they made that... was this when Gene retired? Does that coincide?
I would think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He retired in...
That's it. That's what happened.
December 79. Yeah.
So that was probably one of the last cars that Gene had worked on. And then he retired, that's right. And we took it over. And we changed it as much as we could, being late in the program. We made a lot of serious changes. But we did as much as we could. And we softened the car and made it more aerodynamic and really tried to move it into this new generation. So that was the last car he worked on, and it was a disaster, really. I have to say that. It was a bit of a design disaster. And we made a lot of changes at the last minute. Prior to that, you know, this is an interesting thing. The series of, we call them Panther cars. They're our full-size cars. They're the large Ford and Mercury that we make today, the Lincoln Town Car. Those cars were done very much under Gene's tutelage. And they were done the decision to downsize was delayed, as you know, by Henry Ford. The rest of the industry had downsized, and we sort of decided late that we needed to downsize our full-size cars also. And because we were so late, we had a real crash program to develop these downsized designs. And we virtually had the cars lined up in one big studio, the Ford and the Mercury. And Gene oversaw the design of those cars and had a lot to do with the design of those cars. And at the time, we felt they were too stiff and too boxy and too square. But you know, it's interesting to note that those cars are still selling extremely well, extremely well. In fact, we're making most of our profit on those cars.
He may be smiling at that.
I hope he is, you know. He should be, because they're very successful cars. And even though I look at them, and aesthetically I find them, I see a lot of things I don't like about them, and I think they're a little bit out of date, they're extremely successful. There's a message there. I think we are finding that the American public is not changing their taste in cars as radically or as quickly as we thought they would. That they really have these ingrained ideas about cars.
In terms of decision-making at this point, the late 79. Couldn't there have been a parallel development, or at least a continuation, as this is what's been forced on you, in terms of consumer acceptance, a parallel development of the new, smaller aerodynamic car and the continued late 70s car that has been still so acceptable?
In what sense do you mean?
Well, in terms of product development or product continuance. In other words, could you not... Well, I guess this is what did happen, but I mean, in terms of Gene's philosophy, couldn't there not have been parallel developments? In other words, keeping the type of car that Gene wanted and then going ahead with Telnak's concept?
Yeah, there could have been. Mm-hmm. But this was a little earlier. This was when Henry Ford himself was still at the helm when these
right.
cars were approved. And
I
always had the impression that Gene really was sort of Mr. Ford's designer, that he really trusted him.
Mm-hmm.
And he should, because he did a lot of successful cars for him. And because of the need to do these cars quickly, I think Gene just said, I'm going to do these cars, I'm going to do them a certain way. And Mr. Ford looked at them and liked them, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think there was no room for any alternatives at that time. Those were clearly done by Gene, under Gene.
Uh-huh.
And yes, Jack Telnak was there. In fact, he was the director of that one studio, but Gene made it very clear what he wanted. It was the typical, he spent the day there, he spent the weeks there, he made sure the cars were just what he wanted. And yes, they were successful. I happen to think that they would have been even more successful if we'd changed them a little bit more. But that's a good example. All of those cars are doing very well. The car lines that, I think the only, of that whole series of cars, now there was also a full-size Lincoln, and there was a Mark, a two-door and a four-door, we called it a Mark, that was done, Mark 6. That was also based on that Panther platform. That was not a very successful derivative.
No.
The Mark, four-door, two-door Mark were not very successful for a variety of reasons. Those had the famous country club lamps on them. I always loved that. They had, it's hard to believe, but the Mark had hidden headlamps. The door came down in front of the headlamps and hid them. But attached to the door was a lamp, a phony lamp. I never really understood that, you know. I don't know if that had much to do with why that car didn't sell. But the others have done very well.
Well, obviously you've got a classic situation here in the late 70s. You've got the HF2 Bordenais era, in a sense, holding on. Now, their concepts are still... And then you've got the Young Turks coming up in the design center.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got Gene Peterson and Red Poling pushing that end of it. It's really sort of a classic situation.
It was, and it was lots of fun. And I'm glad I was on the right team at the time, you know. It was.
Uh-huh.
It was fun. And there's still this internal debate about what's the right way to go. I mean, we still have a lot of designers that were... feel much closer to the other era than they do to the new one. And, yeah, you're right. It was an exciting time. It's almost typical of Ford Motor Company, that kind of upheaval, rather than...
wouldn't happen at General Motors.
I wouldn't think it would.
No, they wouldn't allow it.
I would think they would have a nice, controlled change. Now, everyone could see it coming.
A committee decision. Yeah.
But instead, you're right. It was just a political turmoil Jack Telnak, I'm sure, had some direction to do new things, and yet he was still working for Gene Bordenais. That must have been very awkward for him.
Where would this direction have come from?
I think he had a lot of support from those people you mentioned.
Peterson and Poling.
Yeah, and as I said, Bill Burke was a guy that was around for a while.
Still here. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He was still there at the time. We had Lou Veraldi had just come back, vice president of design. I think he was a supporter of Jack's. A lot of the people that came over from Europe, we were bringing a lot of people over from Europe at that time,
mm-hmm.
in various positions. I can't remember all of their names, but we were getting a tremendous influx of, or a return of our management from Europe to the United States. And of course, they all had worked with Jack for the past three or four years and had a lot of respect for him. So I think he had a lot of internal support within the company.
Working with Jack Telnack at this point gave you a rather special advantage.
I think I got lucky, to be honest with you. The fact that when he came back from Europe, his charge was to do a new Mustang. Mm. And I just happened to be one of the design managers in that studio. And we did the car that he liked and that they liked, and I think it was the beginning of a really good relationship between Jack and myself.
And from this vantage point, could you give us some insight as to how and when the decision was made to, after Bourdonnais's resignation, to have a North American design studio under Telnack and a staff vice presidency under Don Kaufman?
To this day, I can't say that anyone knows why that was done. It's just such an unusual organization. We expected, obviously, when Gene left, the two obvious contenders for his job were Don Kopka and Jack Telnack.
Don had been there quite a bit before Jack, mm-hmm. had he
not? Well, not really. Jack...
at least in Denver.
Well, Jack started with the company long before Don Kopka did. Don came from Chrysler Corporation.
That's right.
When? In the early 60s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jack had been with the company from...
But in terms of visibility and assignments, Don had...
Don had been in the U.S.
Yes.
Right. Never had a European assignment. Worked his way up through. Meanwhile, Jack was gone. He was in Europe and Australia. So, yes, you're right. Don was there at the whole time. He was a good friend of... became a good friend of Don Peterson's. Jack was kind of the upstart that came in from Europe, but as I said, a lot of our management had come in from Europe, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of... there's been a lot of speculation on why we organized the way we are. One group says that that the team that was running North American automotive operations sort of... because of their relationship with Jack, sort of wanted Jack to run North American design. They had trust in him, and they might have viewed Don as not the new breed or not the guy they wanted, and that's why they separated.
This was Burke. Still
yeah.
Burke.
Well, no, and this is even after Burke.
Oh, after
I think. Might have still been Burke. Another story is that Gene himself was still very tight with the Ford family, even though it was obvious his career was coming to an end, and that he resented Jack's, that he blamed Jack in a way for his demise, because Jack really was the guy who brought the new design here and really pushed it and had enough political clout behind him to get away with it without Gene just stamping it out. And some people say that Gene blamed Jack for his early retirement. And because of that, he sort of got even by encouraging them to set up the organization the way they did. I don't know. It's an unusual organization.
Has it worked?
Yes. Basically, yes. Although there are disadvantages to the fact that we, in North American design, don't work for a vice president.
Mm-hmm.
You lack a certain amount of clout in the corporation because of that. And, you know, we work for a group of engineers. We work for Stu Fry.
Mm-hmm, right.
And,
Jack reports to Stu Fry, doesn't he?
Right.
Yes.
And Gene never reported to anyone except, I forget how the line went, but it went right straight to the top. So there are disadvantages to that, but they're really not severe. I think it's working very well.
Mm-hmm.
It forced us to become just a little bit more... professional about our approach to design.
In terms of that, you've given me a clue. The reliance on the body engineer group at this point. In other words, not reliance, but in the history of the design center, it's gone back and forth. Early on, it was the body engineers were dominant, and the stylists were simply those who drew pretty pictures, as someone said.
Mm-hmm.
Then under Gene, that dominance was ended under Bourdonnais, and again you came into your own as design negatives. And then there seems to have been, under Fry, an attempt to not to dominate in terms of body engineering, but to make the designers more aware of the problems of body engineering, and to make them they're working much more closely with body engineering groups. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's certainly fair to say that during the Bourdonnais period, that really does design tended to dominate the process. But I think what we have today, whether it's organizational or whether it's just a change in the guard, so to speak, is I think we have a very professional relationship between design and engineering. I think we respect, I say it's design and manufacturing in harmony, because that's really the phase I feel we're in. But we try very hard to respect their needs, because we feel as designers, industrial designers, that we're not stylists anymore, really.
You really are.
That we are. It's our job to be very knowledgeable about the manufacturing and engineering problems, and consider them in our design. So there's that sensitivity now, and yes, we're working closer with them. But we are developing a kind of a mutual trust, because we still we have learned how to present our designs, how to back up our designs with really reasonable objectives and with the aerodynamic philosophies and other ways that we haven't really lost control of the design in a way. We just have a much better relationship. It's just a more professional working relationship between design and engineering. And yes, we have conflicts, but I think it's a pretty equal fight. You know, it's a good match, and I think at times the engineers make engineering compromises in the name of design, and we'll do the same thing for them. So I think there's a balance right now, and it's probably a pretty good balance. I don't feel at all dominated by an engineering management, if that's not at all. In fact, with my background, you know, not really majoring in automotive design, but having kind of a much more of an industrial design background, I'm very comfortable in this environment, and most of the younger designers are. So I think it's a very good it's a good period.
The era of the stylist really has ended. You're really industrial design.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I think it's certainly leaning more toward that. Yeah. And yet there's still that creative. The thing that separates a stylist really from an industrial designer, I think, is that extra creative ability, that imagination, or that bit of a theatrical flamboyance that the industrial designers don't always have. And so we're somewhat of a different breed than the industrial designer. And the creativity hasn't gone out of it. That they still look to us, you know, the corporation does, for that inspiration. I mean, they really need us now more than ever, almost.
Us being?
The design profession.
Right.
Automotive designers.
Did you have anything to do with the, I think you did, with the Mark 7?
I was in the answer's no.
Hmm.
We were doing the Tempo Topaz around that same time frame, and I came into the luxury studio after the car had been completed. That the Thunderbird and the Mark 7 and the T-Bird were all done concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I didn't.
Final approval had been given.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
I think it's great.
Uh-huh.
I think it's unfortunate that the corporation had to build three cars with so much common sheet metal. Because I think the Mark needs to be more distinctive. It's a nice design. It's a good design. All three of those cars, the T-Bird, Cougar, Mark, are very nice.
What's a common platform?
It's a Fox.
Fox still.
Mm-hmm. It's a Fox platform, and the fact that the Thunderbird and Cougar preceded the Mark's introduction by 6 months, I think.
Maybe a technical error.
I'm sure it was,
mm-hmm.
because we're already getting feedback that the Mark is not a. It's doing okay, but it's not a tremendous success. And one of the reasons is that people say that it does look like a Thunderbird to them.
Uh-huh.
And it almost you can't avoid that problem because it does share some common parts.
But that's a superficial observation, really.
Well, but that's, styling is superficial, you know, and that's what you're buying when you buy that mark. That's part of what you're buying is that distinctive, sure, I want to be different. So I like the car very much. And
very exciting.
Exciting and well engineered. And ergonomically very good. The interior is well designed. It handles superbly. It's a beautiful road machine. It's a wonderful car.
And with the new the boost, hasn't it gotten a energy boost recently?
Well, there's a turbo diesel.
Yeah, a turbo diesel.
But really, that's not the most powerful of the two engines.
No.
I think the V8's the one to have. But it's just a fine automobile. It really is.
Is the at this point in 1984, can you say the mark is going to survive?
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's one of those nameplates that we have, like Mustang, that should live forever. It's or Thunderbird. It's a name that will sell cars. I mean,
I guess what I meant is, will it survive its present form?
Well, we're looking at in the 1989-90 time frame, there will be a new mark.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asking me, will it return to the kind of car it used to be? No, it won't. It'll always be a. It's to me, it's a contemporary luxury, personal luxury car, and it will remain so. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure out there. The marketplace is saying that still likes a hint of the old formal luxury car. But the car hasn't been designed yet, so I'm speculating, but I can't believe that we will regress on that one. I just think we should keep moving.
I think the town car will continue for another.
I think we'll continue with that one as long as we can sell it. It's doing remarkably well. And I think the current plans are just to continue to make it as long as we can, you know, as long as it will sell. I mean, it's you said it. Gene is smiling about that one. And he should. And as a matter of fact, the Taurus program we talked about, which was to be the new Ford and Mercury, there is a possibility that they will introduce that as a replacement for the smaller, the Ford LTD, and continue to produce the large Panther Ford. So I think we're going to continue to make those cars as long as we can.
The Taurus program seems very exciting from what you've told us.
Yeah, it was, and it still is.
And I've noticed there is some reliance on European concepts. Few glimpses I've had of.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Perhaps even a Audi, Mercedes look.
Well, I think it's definitely it's not a domestic American look. It's more of an international look, I would say.
Yeah.
I think the public will say that it is a European look. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only because I think one of the reasons it has that, you have that impression, is that the design philosophy behind it was, I'm sure, similar to the design philosophies of people like Audi and Mercedes, because I mentioned the station wagon that we developed with having no idea what Audi was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see them introduce a very, very similar concept. It just, we were just thinking that way about this car. And yes, it has a European, it will be perceived to have a very European look to it, and yet there's enough American touches on the car, I think,
mm-hmm.
that it should be successful.
What stage is that in now, in mid-84?
We're into the
design and...
The car has been totally approved, and they're into the second or third phase of prototypes, so they're cars,
drivable
prototypes, and...
the final package has not been completed.
Oh, yeah.
The final approval has not been given.
Oh, yes.
But
that's it.
Okay.
It's been totally approved. All systems are go. It's almost out of our hands at this point.
Is it?
It's almost totally into the engineering environment.
Mm-hmm.
We are still working on minor things like molding details and wheel covers and things like that, but the car is totally, the ship has sailed, as we say. It's just going to happen.
Since this tape would be not available to any of your competitors. Can you give us an idea of the changes in the interior? Any changes in ergonomics? Mid-84?
Well, yeah, ergonomics has become as important to interiors, I guess, as aerodynamics have to the exteriors. Ergonomics, you know, we're talking about how user friendly is it?
I like that
user friendly. Yes, it's designing interiors with real consideration of how they're going to be used. Where are the controls placed? Are they placed properly? Easily reached? The comfort of the seats. Putting a very high priority on the functionality rather than the appearance. Yes, these interiors are very dramatically different from anything we've done before. In fact, they're different from anything the Europeans have done before. I think they're going to be interesting to see because they are very sculptural. They're not flat planes. They're very sculptural. They are designed to relate to the exterior in form, so they're soft and sculptural. They flow around you in the interior. They were completely devoid of any kind of bright work or even wood grain. Mm-hmm. It's a very dramatic difference.
What has been substituted?
Either color for the instrument panel itself, or variations of non-reflective matte black finishes. A lot of the switches are tactilely designed rather than, you know, where they just by feel you can tell how they operate and what they do. We spend a great deal of time on placement of the controls, visibility. The instrumentation is extremely legible. It's lit from the back instead of the front, which just makes perfect resolution. Each and every control has been, it's received more attention, I think, than any. We've moved a lot of the controls, minor controls like window controls, mirrors, etc., off onto the door panels, but they're not placed flat on the armrest, but they're up and canted toward the driver position so that they can be seen and operated easily. The interiors really have a dramatically different look. Now, the interior concepts were done under Ray Everts and myself and Bob Zokas. Then at sort of the midpoint, after the basic themes had been approved, Trevor Creed came over.
Mm-hmm. Again from
Great Britain, yeah. England, and took over all the interior design and those panels too. Then he has, his influence has been to further refine the ergonomics, you know, which is, it's just gotten better based on his European experience. And in addition, he's introduced new colors and textures and materials into the interiors that are very European. New use of materials, new sorts of trim styles that are very tailored rather than, how can I describe it? Rather than the sort of the you see a lot of loose cushioned, wrinkled, almost furniture interior furniture design type interiors in cars. These are very automotive, very tailored, very tight. It's the total package is going to be extremely dramatic, I think. And in addition, you know, the cars, there's virtually no chrome on the exteriors. A lot of the bumpers are going to be color, contrasting color, impregnated rather than being. We'll have a red car, let's say a dark red upper with a light silver, light red lower, that kind of color-coordinated upper-lower combination. The car, everything about the car is different. We just went through, and unfortunately went through the interiors and added a few little touches of wood and chrome. Kind of a late change.
Anyone's insistence?
Yes. I have to say it's probably Mr. Poling is the one. And this relates to the fact that we discussed that the remarkable longevity of the current Panther cars, the Fords and Mercurys and Lincolns, are just selling like crazy. And you can't ignore it. And they represent old world design for us, really. But if we have to, you know, we really, as designers, we can't ignore that. And if that kind of thing is selling, I think it's important if you can incorporate it in a way that you're happy with. So we have added a little bit. They've added a little bit of wood and a little bit of chrome, but nothing too serious. But the interiors are very dramatic shapes. They have there are two uniquely different interiors for the Ford and Mercury.
That's good.
Totally different instrument panels. They just come off as being very, very new, and they come off as the interior is what you'd expect to see inside the car when you see the exterior. They work together very well. They fit. It's going to be good.
Have you come up with code names for both of them yet, besides Taurus?
Well, yes. The Ford model is going to be called the Taurus.
It is going to be. It's going to keep that down.
And the Mercury model is the Sable.
Sable. Yes,
that's I'm getting used to that one. It's taken a while.
Took a while.
Yeah, but it'll be the Mercury Sable.
Great.
And Ford Taurus.
Mid-86. Late 85.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think it may be the spring. So it'd be early 86.
Some of the concept cars that we've seen, which were recently displayed here at the museum for the Grand Prix, were fascinating to me in the sense that van concept, of which the Aerostar apparently is a offshoot.
Yeah,
I found very exciting, and yet the Aerostar, for all the work that's gone into it, seemed to me to be a compromise, not a compromise in terms of the competition at the moment, but it seems to me that prototypical van that I saw from the design center was really exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're right.
Someone had really said, forget this, let's push this one, see what happens.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I know that every designer would agree with you. That original concept van was just excellent. Very, very nice. And I know there were a lot of changes made just because of feasibility issues. That particular model had a very extremely fast windshield and a very deep instrument panel because of the fast windshield. Probably faster than was feasible. You know, when the windshield gets much faster than 65 degrees, you really begin to get a lot of problems with interior reflections and distortions, etc. That might have been a problem. I haven't followed that program. I agree with you. I think I like the car we've got coming. By the way, I think the Aerostar is the van. Mm-hmm. It's a nice looking van.
Certainly ahead of your competition.
Yeah, and a good size.
And they've done the feasibility problem has been solved, I suspect.
Yeah,
there'd been about a 6-month delay had there not in its original.
That's right. Date. That's right. Yeah, which is unfortunate, but I like the design. It's always a disappointment when you look. There often you'll have concept cars that are much more attractive to most of our eyes than the final design. It's just, again, it's this compromises that are necessary. I don't think anyone wanted to change it all that much, but that often happens. It's not unusual. Well, I wouldn't call it a planning problem. I think most of the changes were probably generated by engineering and feasibility problems, cost restraints. There were a lot of expensive features on that show car. And that van, I know, was designed not just as a passenger car, but they didn't want to lose a certain segment of the utility van market,
right,
the commercial market. And those guys are really they're really looking for function. And I think you have to make some compromises so that it suits those needs, too.
Do you know who designed that?
The original was a Ghia concept.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And then it... the version that was done over here was and it did change a lot, was done by, I believe, by Dave Reese and in Don Capia's area. That particular project was done. Came out of the Advanced Studio almost exclusively. You know, you talk about advanced design. The other car that they've done that's going to have a tremendous impact on our future products is the Probe Series. The Probe Series of aerodynamic cars.
Yes.
The last one being the Probe 5, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Have you followed that series?
I haven't been involved in it, but the program I'm working on now is the new, we call it the MN-12 program, but it's the 1989 Thunderbird and Cougar, all new car again, and Mark. And the basic program has been very strongly influenced by those, the latest probe vehicles, especially the Probe 5. We're going to incorporate a lot of the features, aerodynamic features, into this production program. The car is going to, at the moment, is going to have totally flush glass. We call it four-sided flush glass. It's articulated to come out and be flush everywhere. It's going to have an extremely low hood, extremely low front end, probably some partial belly pan work. We're shooting for a drag coefficient down around 2.7, 2.6, which is very low. So that car...
could really revolutionize.
Yeah, and again, although I'm sure you'll... If I talk to you 2 years from now or 3 years, you'll say, gee, you guys, the probe was so nice, and you know, it happens, you know.
Yeah.
But we're starting off with something that is remarkably strongly influenced by that that car.
Well, that's good to hear, because I think the probe is very exciting.
Yeah, I do too.
There was another car in that series, the new Mustang. Not the new Mustang, but the Mustang... prototype, not in the Pro Series, but the series of the show cars that were brought over here at the Grand Prix showing.
The one they just had.
Yes.
That little Mustang, that was nice. The Vignale, yeah.
Are you going to do anything with that?
Well, that's
looks very exciting.
That looks very nice. That's a really a nice reskin of the current Mustang. Excellent.
I see.
No, there are no plans.
No plans for that. No.
The Mustang, as you know, is going to be. We have a joint venture with Mazda.
That's right.
And the ST16 is the code name for the car that will be coming in 1988, which will be the new Mustang, and it will be just a radical departure from where the Mustang is now. It's a different kind of car, and a very nice one.
Very quickly, in the few minutes we have. Your career at Ford has been very exciting for you, obviously.
It has.
Especially in recent years.
Especially in recent years.
Yeah, and this is fascinating, I suspect.
It's been... it was very frustrating at the beginning, because once I got over the initial excitement of being involved in this industry, then I realized that I really was from a different generation than my management. It's
you've
been
adapted very nicely.
Well, I tried, but it's been nice. The changes over the last few years, it's been a really rewarding time, because I've been asked to contribute more and more, and you always feel good about that when people are listening and asking for help, and I really feel so much more a part of what's going on now than I did before. I was, and that's why I think when we started talking about what was going on, I was really on the periphery of what was the events back there in the '60s and '70s.